Welcome to Art Education in Critical Times. My name is Shrika, also known as Ms. Shaw. Here you can call me the Oracle. The title of this episode is Level Up. This week we'll be talking about the hidden curriculum in public schools with our special guest, Ms. Ashley Green, hitting our Art Bay of the Week, and so much more. Hope you stick around and check out what the woke teachers are thinking about. Art Bay of the Week. Every week we highlight an artist who is doing it big, who's really reflecting the time, speaking to the people, and just displaying amazing, amazing work. This week we're not doing a artist. We're actually discussing a whole pop-up museum. Museum of Broken Windows. They are in New York City, and it features 60 artworks by 30 artists. I mean, it's amazing. They have a full cop car inside the building. Windows smashed out, growing plants. It looks like it might have been the car from Beyonce's Lemonade video. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. Actually, I know who the artist is. His name is Jordan Webbers. There are some amazing original pieces by the producers of the actual event. There's some simple infographics with statistics. I mean, original documentation of arrests of folks like Keith Haring and an amazing picture of him being arrested at the same time. The exhibit was produced by SOZE, which is a social impact agency doing amazing work around the country. They hosted their very own artist fellowship for previously incarcerated folks, among other super impactful work. They've had a number of awesome guests from classrooms of students to NYPD having a private viewing of the exhibit. The exhibit just really brings the audience to consider how controversial the policy of stop and frisk is, and how it's targeting people of color and impacting their lives and those around them. I hope you all took notes. So Zay is out here trying to teach lessons, and with artists like Jordan Webber, former incarcerated self-taught artist Russell Craig, and Ann Lewis, among others, folks are learning. And now it's time for The Educator Who Sat By The Door. During this segment, we talk to an educator who is woke, who is a millennial, who teaches any subject, any part of the country, any grade level. If you're wondering what's up with this The Educator Who Sat By The Door, it's a spinoff from a great film called The Spook Who Sat By The Door. This week, we're lucky to get to speak to Ashley Green. She is a 11th grade literature teacher in Tallahassee, Florida. Let's do it. This week's guest is none other than the great Miss Ashley Green. Ashley, welcome. We're so excited to have you on the show this week.
Thank you. Thank you. So excited to be here.
Awesome. So I thought it'd be cool if we started off this week with a quote by Assata Shakur. It goes, "No one is going to give you the education you need to overthrow them. Nobody is going to teach you your true history, teach you your true heroes, if they know that that knowledge will help set you free." I mean, I love Assata so much, Mama Assata, and I feel like she's taught us so much about what it means and what's necessary to be free. But this, she's specifically not talking about, you know, the system as a whole, but she's diving into one specific institution. What do you think about this quote?
I definitely think it's true to an extent. So when we think about the oppressor teaching the oppressed, there's no way they're ever going to teach them to overthrow them. Like, they're not going to give them the tools to be able to overthrow them. So, it's definitely true. And when I think about us as educators and who we are, I think the way we approach education is, or it should be, something different than that.
So, that's I love that you're not completely gung-ho and sold on everything and every piece of this quote. As you know, this podcast is for millennial educators who chose to teach, understanding that ed the education system isn't all that it should be and isn't the same for everyone. We're really here to speak with woke teachers who listen to the new Carter Five, yet still spend that extra 5 minutes to check in with Jerome after class to make sure that he's good. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about like the pieces of the quote that don't exactly like resonate with you.
Okay, so myself as an educator, I'm always teaching my students how to be powerful, how to be better than me, because I know that my mother, who's an immigrant, taught me how to be better than her, and she's always pushing and propelling me forward. So when I think about my students, I know I'm not going to be able to do it all, and I don't really want to be able to do it all. So I look at my job as giving them the tools to be able to conquer everything, and most importantly, to feel and sometimes be the most powerful person in the room, because when they're not the most powerful person in the room, people are going to want to take advantage of them. And that's something I constantly remind them, when I am trying to educate them.
Yeah, that makes sense. As even like an art teacher, we're not going to be able to teach them everything about everyone, about every circumstance, but there are some core values, and practices and characteristics that we hope that we can bring out, in a lesson, in a day, in a full year, in a semester. I'm really curious about, so like if we're not, if we're able to do those things, but like, actual textbook curriculum, like folks aren't learning about their heroes, folks aren't learning real history in certain places in the country, they're completely like just wiping certain history out of the textbooks. You don't need to know that. So, during this conversation, I'm really interested in us diving into those things that we aren't teaching that Asada is talking about. I had the pleasure of listening to and reading some work by Antonia Darber. She's an educator and activist, poet, artist from Puerto Rico that lives here in the States and has been an educator for a couple years and a professor. And she's a huge follower of Paulo Freire. And I know that you are a fan. I am a fan. And yeah, so like in one of her talks, she mentioned a hidden curriculum that we teach in our schools. She's saying that, we're really teaching dominant values of society, things like assimilation, consumerism, and then like even in our history, like overall justification of oppression that we've caused on folks within our country and even on other lands. And I heard you say that your mom, being an immigrant, taught you a couple of things and you know a couple of things. What's your take on the hidden curriculum that is like just kind of ingrained into the institution of public education here in the States?
It's so interesting that you say that, because I teach American literature, and there are so many things that I grapple with in teaching American literature, because I'm teaching my students about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, and I know that so much of this information didn't apply to their ancestors. So there's a point in that conversation where students who are very conscious and aware of what's going on in society are saying, "Miss Green, this don't apply to black people.
Girl, what you gonna do? What you say?
And that's the point where we have a very real conversation where we have to take a look at society and say, well, within context, no, it doesn't apply to black people. And I always ask them, what makes you say that? Mm-hmm. And this gets them thinking and gets them throwing things out at me where we can have very real conversations about what's happening in society. And that, I guess, allows us to step away from the textbook because this textbook is focusing on things that are from 400 years ago.
That's right.
And even in that 400 years ago, it wasn't inclusive, especially not of my students, because mm-hmm. I teach a very large population of black and brown students. And they're at a point in their education where they're not going to accept anything at face value. Mm-hmm. And if I'm really educating them, that's what I want from them. I want them to be questioning me. I want them to say, Miss Green, this don't sound right.
So the
and we're going to have very real conversations around why that don't sound right.
That's right. That's right. Because one of the things that Antonia said is she's like, she's so passionate. And she's one of the things I love about her as an educator is that she really takes to Paolo's teaching that, listen, I'm an expert at my experience. I know that. Now I can learn this other stuff, the how, this and the that. But like, she really believes that all of us are experts in our own right based on our lived experience that wasn't taught to us, that can be taken from us, and no one knows it better than us. So like, as you're talking to your students, like, all right, you're right, let's talk about this. She's saying things like, let's believe that we make history. If we're not conscious of being creators of our destiny, someone makes it for us, and it may not be to our best interest. Mm-hmm. Right? Isn't that so good?
Yes.
It's so good and it's so true. It's so true. Yeah. So like, you know, even as a teacher, hearing you have to navigate that on such pillar documents in our country, in our education, we are still having to make and negotiate and, you know, with curriculum and content in our classrooms. And I think that that is such a hard thing to do for any educator, especially an educator who's in the margins. And it's such an important thing for us to be able to figure out who we are and what we believe before we can even come to the classroom and address that student who's saying something like, hey, Miss Green, this don't make no sense to me. Or, hey, Miss Green, I know this doesn't apply to black people. As a teacher, how do you navigate that? Like, what is your process of figuring out, okay, I'm, you know, Ashley Green. Historically, this is who I am. Politically, this is who I am. Economically, this is who I am. And what pieces of that do I bring into the classroom to the forefront? What piece of that do I bring into the classroom and just hold? And what pieces do you feel like you have to, you know, leave outside the door? But before we get into that, how are you figuring those pieces of you out as a teacher? I know you got to wake up early before the sunrise and you're going to sleep late. You got to still make your food and stuff. How are you figuring out, you know, following along the track of who you are and how you're changing so that you can be aware of that when you bring it to the classroom?
Wow, that's a tough one. I guess I'm still figuring that out. But what I'm learning now is I do need to take more time than I was giving myself before the start of the day to prepare myself, to process, to be present, because you do, when you're a teacher, you do go to work with a lot on your mind and you leave work with a lot on your mind. So I realize that I do need to wake up earlier to be able to prepare and present myself and be present. And I've taken to writing a lot of things down. So that better helps me process what's going on. And to, I think in recording those thoughts, I can pinpoint some things that I need to return to, but also some things that I need to work on or ask my coworkers about, because a lot of those conversations are difficult to have. And sometimes you can mess up in saying the wrong things, because I don't think my classroom is ready for my radicalism. I don't think my school is ready for my radicalism. Like, I don't think schools in general are ready.
And the exciting thing is that you're not alone, right? Like, you're not the one in a million. Folks are experiencing these things. We have family members being locked up. We have family members being deported. We have moms who work two jobs, ridiculous shifts. We have student loans piling up. We're also experiencing that something's not adding up, right? So you're not alone in that. I think that's the crazy thing, that there's so many people experiencing, you know, are feeling like my classroom isn't ready for how radical and progressive I am. Neither is my school, neither is my district. But we're going to get to that, because the question is, so then what? But I'm sorry. You know, I get excited, girl.
Definitely, definitely. So I guess going back to that, just giving myself time to be present, giving myself time to reflect, is helping me to better understand my place in the classroom and who I am as a teacher.
So that's a great way to process it. From previous conversations, I know that you have gone to different political education sessions. I know that you're constantly reading as well, and really just making sure that you're on the cutting edge of how things are progressing in social justice. So as you're figuring all this stuff out, how do you decide what you leave and take with you? How do you, politically in the classroom, historically in the classroom, economically in your classroom, how much do your students know about you, and how much do you feel like that reflects in the way you teach and what you teach?
So I try to be fairly transparent with my students. So they know that my parents are immigrants, but I don't tell them to the extent how immigration has affected my family. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if that were ever a conversation, I would be able to be transparent with my students. Mm-hmm. So if there were students who were dealing with immigration or deportation, I feel like those are conversations that I would be able to have with my students.
So now we enter our segment called 2020. Every week, we take a look at some amazing new innovation tech thing that's happening that's intersecting with education, and we ask our teacher who sat by the door what they think about that. How do they think that's going to impact students? And most importantly, how are they going to navigate that on the daily? Let's see what's going on this week. All right, so this week on Level Up, we're going to talk about Apple, Google, and IBM, and how they just completely dropped the ball on us by saying that they no longer require college degrees. Ashley, what do you think? I mean, bachelor's, master's, what does this mean for the future of education?
This is some real pushback, and I think it's very necessary pushback. So for a long time, the system has been telling us, this is what makes you qualified, and Google is like, no, this is not. And I would assume that Google has done some research, and they've gotten quote-unquote qualified candidates who don't have degrees, and they were like, hold up. Hold up. Maybe this don't matter. And us on the ground floor, like, we was telling you it didn't matter.
Oh my gosh. And I think it's really interesting because it's, you know, it's technology, right? You're learning to code. I don't know if there's degrees in coding or not, but there's so many other qualities and skill sets that the future is going to require from us. And it can be self-taught, it can be online, one course taught. And a lot of jobs outside of, these things really are going to be done by robots, right? So it's such an interesting thing. And the question is, how are we preparing our students for such a wide job market at the same time being such a narrow job market, right? Because so many of the jobs won't be available, but, not every job's going to need a degree. Not every job's going to need all the requirements that are necessary now. How do you see technology and all these things of the future being incorporated, like at your school, for example?
So I currently teach at a Title I school. So all of that technology we get last. So, in my classrooms, my students don't really use computers. The only technology we use, are like PowerPoints and things like that. So I have students who have never typed a paper before, like in their, whole time being in school. They remove the requirements for computer classes and things like that. So when we talk about access, like if we're talking about all students across the board, it could be a bit challenging because, of course, a majority of my students have cell phones, but all of them don't, right? So there's going to be those one in two students who are going to miss out. Because technology moves so quickly, so quickly. We're talking about the change from the iPhone 6 to the iPhone 7.
The leap that happened.
Yeah. The Mac 13 to the Mac 14. Like the fact that they've got the fingerprint scanner, the Face ID, the way that these hardwares and softwares are advancing at such fast paces, So if my students were at a school where they had access to these technologies, it'd be great. But I also think it leaves room to widen that gap.
That's right. And the thing is, it's, when I was growing up, I had to hear a whole band come through the living room before I got connected to the internet, the dial-up, right? So that's what we were born. Like, I wasn't born knowing Google, knowing all these things. This is a generation of folks born with access of Google. Like, my daughter Sahara knows Google now. Like, you know what I mean? Knows touchscreen now. It's frightening to think about folks as young as my daughter being two, understanding technology, and at the same time hearing you say you teach at like a Title I school and that you have students who've never typed a paper. They are so far behind on, in being able to use the software. How do you do a resume? How do you type an email? How do you apply for a job? Like very basic necessities, right? And then this is when we're talking about like institutionalized racism. Where we're talking about, there are people who have tickets to go on the first flight or spaceship to Mars. And at the same time, we have black children who've never typed a paper. It's important for us as educators to be, regardless of whatever race you are, whatever creed you are, whatever ethnicity you are, we all have to be Afrofuturists because the way that things are looking, the future is planning not to have the poor. The future is not planning to have the brown and the black. And it's our duty as educators, as cultivators and engineers of the future to make sure that as we are pouring into our students, that we're giving them the eyesight, that 20/20 to see the future, but also advocating to make sure they have the resources that's necessary.
And in addition to that, our people, black and brown people, have always been able to adapt in ways unseen. So when we're talking about all these job markets requiring technology, I can see the ways that my students are going to be able to make it work for them. So I talked about my students not being able, they're me having students who have never typed a paper before, but I've also had a student who had never typed before but typed his whole essay on his phone. Like, so the ways I see my students navigating between this oppression is sometimes so inspiring. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. despite all of this, I know that they can make it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So just the way that I've seen Black and brown people adapt. So I guess for me, the fact that Google, IBM, and that other company, the fact that they've removed the degree requirement, shows me that the system or some systems within this system are pushing back on the kinds of education that we valued or the kinds of education that society has put at the forefront. And that gives us as educators room to highlight and showcase the ways that our students have been educated and the ways Black and brown people have been educating each other for centuries around the dinner table, around the fire, you know. So,
so good. That's we could have a whole other conversation on bell hooks teaching community. And that's what she's saying. She's saying that as educators, it's not just a clock in, clock out job. Once you're an educator, once you're a pedagogue, you're always teaching. You're always looking for the opportunity to learn. You're always gathering people to process together. And like you're saying, that is happening around the dinner table. That is happening at church. It is happening on the playground, because this is how we've survived for so long. But Ashley, thank you so much for joining us this week. And I'll see you out there in the trenches, huh?
I'll be here.
All right. Thank you.
Of course, always.
So I'm going to leave you all with a couple questions as usual. But before I do, this week we talked about a lot. We talked about artists taking, you know, the lessons of stop and frisk and overall criminalization of people of color to an exhibit and bringing all different folks in to hear all different stories and how that's impacted so many different lives. And we talked to Miss Green, Miss Ashley Green, and talked to her about how does she navigate who she is and what she believes as she brings that into the classroom. And then we discussed how things are changing. Apple, Google, IBM changing the requirements to be an employee with such outstanding, well-known, forward-thinking companies. What's the role of the educator? What's happening here? What is critical pedagogy, not just for the student, but for the teacher? How are we pushing back on dominant beliefs? What is the hidden curriculum that we are perpetuating or teaching very well? And how do we bring ourselves into the classroom with our political beliefs, our worldview, and navigate and negotiate both of these things with such amazing opportunity, with such brilliant minds? How does your own history, economic status, and political views impact your students? How does the lack of awareness of these things impact your students? And what are you doing to figure that out? Until next time.